scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al. Aguila, rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, welcome to the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk on a Thursday, January 23rd. Yeah, with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg here in the Hot Stove Lounge as this hour of Flames Talk gets going wherever you get your podcasts and live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Mr. Gilbertson, welcome back to this place. It's been a while since the Flames have been getting ready to play a game here at the Dome.
It feels like we haven't been here very much lately, doesn't it?
It's because we haven't.
It's true.
And then they're going to go back on the road. This starts off Thursday night, a stretch of 3 games in 4 nights. And then after that third game, they'll go back-to-back in Minnesota, Winnipeg, Saturday, Sunday this weekend. Then they're home for a good chunk of time leading into the Four Nations break on February 9th. And the Flames are back at it here on home ice against the Buffalo Sabres on this Thursday night. And boy, there's been a lot swirling around about this Sabres team all season, as they're almost certainly destined to make it 14 straight years out of the playoffs, which is the second longest drought in the four North American professional sports. Only the New York Jets have gone longer without making the postseason.
Matt Coronado, cover your ears.
Oh, poor Matty. 14 straight years is what the Sabres are heading towards, barring an incredible second-half turnaround. That's what we're talking about for this Sabres group.
As I said to Mike Harrington, one of the Sabres reporters who was here this morning, it's almost hard not to be in the wild card race in the Eastern Conference, right? Like, everybody's in. Except the Sabres.
Yeah, they literally are not in it. They've got 41 points, and they're staring up at everybody in that conference, 11 back. I mean, they're 4 back of the next team.
Yeah.
And you could make an argument that the Islanders could still think that they've got life in this wild card race in the Eastern Conference. The Buffalo Sabres do not. They've got an 11-point gap and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams that they'd need to jump over to make the playoffs. I don't think I'm really all that much of a hot take when I say that, they're going to make it 14 straight years missing the playoffs.
I mean, you and I both like to check out the numbers at Money Puck as far as playoff chances are concerned. And I haven't on the Sabres, but I'd say they're a snowball's chance in the old HE double
hockey
sticks.
You can use that word.
No, there's been enough cursing this week.
That's a good point.
HE double hockey sticks.
They are one of, you know what? They are not one of the teams with a 0.0% chance of making it over at Money Puck. Chicago,
all those teams in the West?
Yeah, Chicago, San Jose are the only two teams at zero. Then Buffalo at 0.8%.
They're still giving the Predators a fighting chance, hey?
5.5% for the Preds. Higher than Seattle at 2.6 and Anaheim at 1.1. So,
wow, okay.
Reason I bring up the Sabres is because this team has done the rebuild thing multiple times over the last 14 years as text line
perpetual.
Is wide open.
It's been a perpetual attempt to rebuild.
Cycle after cycle of, okay, rebuild 1.0 and then 2.0 and then, I don't know, is this 3, 3.5, 4? I don't know. But over the last decade plus, this Sabres team has tried to blow it up and hard rebuild many times. And you know, they've had high picks galore just of some of the names that have been selected in the first round by the Sabres team. Sam Reinhart was a second overall pick. Jack Eichel was a second overall pick. Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power were first overall picks. Dylan Cousins, a seventh overall pick. You can throw a few other names in there as well. Very few of those high picks even still play for the team anymore. The last three guys, Power, Cousins, Dahlin, are still members of the Sabres as it stands right now. And once again, here they are having a nightmare season and destined to make it 14 straight years out of the playoffs. And here's what I don't think there's any debate on, that the Sabres are one of, if not the best example of the other side of the coin of trying to blow it up. When it comes to blowing it up and then rebuilding and turning your team into a contender, Buffalo's done it terribly. They have missed every mark, and you know, even with some revelations like Tage Thompson and Alex Tuch, so on and so far, they still can't get it right. And
they're the cautionary tale.
Right, and right? They're the one that if you talk to somebody who is against blowing it up and against rebuilding, they're the first team that you point to. There are others. I mean, it took Edmonton a long time to figure it out, but they have. They got to Game 7 of a Stanley Cup final. I think you can say their rebuild has finally been successful, but it took them finding a generational player and then years on top of that to do it. Utah, Arizona is still the steel. Old Jay Feaster's term, still wandering in the desert as they try to figure themselves out, and Buffalo wandering in the western New York tundra trying to do the same thing. So they've got it wrong, and Buffalo, I think, is the number one cautionary tale, no doubt about it. And so I think and we're going to get into a conversation about this whole thing, but it sure does drive home the point that whether you're retooling on the fly or whether you're hard rebuilding and completely nuking it, you still have to do it right. And we know Buffalo has not done the latter right so far, and I don't know what the confidence level is in that market that all of a sudden they're going to start doing it right. And we'll see if the Flames can do what they're trying to do right. It's still pretty early on in the process to determine one way or the other. But the Sabres have not done a hard rebuild correct.
No. No, and they're still trying, but they are absolutely exhibit A for the, you know, potential pitfalls or whatever you want to call it of tearing it down to the studs. And I think if you take a look at the way that they've attempted it in various iterations and the way that the Flames are currently attempting their youth movement, the difference is the veteran pieces, right? And they've had some in Buffalo. It's not like they've let the kids sort of try to run the show on their own. And yet this franchise was probably handed to the kids really early, and as has been sort of chronicled, it was a franchise that was willing to accept losing because they thought it might get them Connor McDavid. And what we talk about here at the Saddle Dome constantly, and the reason we talk about it constantly, is all our conversations on the record, off the record, shooting the breeze, whatever, with people from the team, that's what you hear. We're not going to let that losing culture set in. We're not going to let this become one of those perpetual, oh, geez, what's happening now? And I think they would point to the Buffalo Sabres. They're not going to do it pregame today and, you know, stick it on the bulletin board. But they point to the Buffalo Sabres as proof that if you don't do this properly, you just have to keep trying. You just get stuck 14 straight years without making the playoffs in a league that 16 teams make the playoffs.
Now, I would say that there is also, to balance this conversation, because I'm not, please don't get me wrong, that this is not us coming on here on Flames Talk saying, no, never blow your team up, and what the Flames are doing, that's the only way to do it, and that's not what I'm trying to suggest at all. Instead, I just think it's a really fascinating conversation, because I think the Calgary Flames, prior to this Craig Conroy regime, were a pretty good example of, you know, the pitfalls and the cautionary tale of trying to do it the other way. And there are some other teams that have attempted to do the same thing. And, you know, Vancouver, you could point to as a really good example. And, you know, Vancouver's had about the same amount of fleeting success in the last decade plus that the Flames have had. They've gotten to one second round, or I guess 2 second rounds. And the Flames have gotten to 2 second rounds. Vancouver got to theirs in the bubble year. Calgary got to theirs a couple years afterwards. But, you know, Calgary played Edmonton and Anaheim in second rounds. Vancouver played Vegas and Edmonton in second rounds. And so the Canucks are a pretty good example of trying to continually retool on the fly and never fully commit to the – and so I think those – prior to this, the Flames tried to do that, and it hadn't necessarily worked swimmingly. In fact, they looked like they were going down one road, and then they pivoted, and it turned them back into a cycle of just missing or just getting in for a number of years. So there are cautionary tales on the other side as well of trying to retool this on the fly. But what I think, and we'll start reading some of the texts as well, what I think it comes down to is that what Buffalo and to a lesser extent maybe Utah and a few other teams have shown us, we'll see what Ottawa ends up doing here in the next few years, but it does feel like maybe the Sens are finally, and Detroit maybe starting to get to where they want to be. But what it shows you is that if you do it wrong, it doesn't work on doesn't necessarily work on either side. And even if you're the Sabres, and you know they got their guys, Buffalo should not be in this position. Jack Eichel and Sam Reinhart and Rasmus Dahlin should be the core of a team that is competing for Stanley Cups, because Rasmus Dahlin is an elite defenseman and Jack Eichel is a Hart Trophy caliber center, and Sam Reinhart's going to score 50 goals 2 years in a row.
And I don't want to disagree with your point. I only want to add Owen Power to the list.
Owen Power's a first overall pick too, and a potential franchise defenseman. Absolutely. Like, this should be the core of a Stanley Cup contending team, and it's not.
And I think it's what makes them such a fascinating case study is, you know, you kind of look and go, okay, well, what has gone wrong? You know, I mentioned probably turning it over to the kids too early, not maybe having the right veterans around them. Yes, they brought in Ryan O'Reilly for a spell. I remember when they had David Legault for a stint, like a guy who'd been around forever. It's not like there weren't any veterans there. So you look, that's one of the things that I would point to that's gone wrong. You look at their drafting, I don't think it's been bad, right? You look at the high picks, they got really good players. They got Power, they got Dahlin, they got Eichel, they got Reinhart. You look at, you know, Victor Olofsson was a seventh round pick. They picked Brandon Hagel in the sixth round of a draft and then didn't sign him. Like, they've found some talent. And so as you start to look at what's gone wrong, or if you're Craig Conroy and you kind of look and say, well, what can I learn? Like, what's the difference? I think one of the ultimate failings of the Buffalo Sabres has been that the superstars that they have found, they haven't been able to keep.
Yep.
Right? Those two players you mentioned in terms of forwards, Jack Eichel leaves, wins the Stanley Cup with the Vegas Golden Knights, and not as a hanger-on with the Vegas Golden Knights, as a
driving force
for that team. Sam Reinhart, similar to Matthew Tkachuk here in Calgary, winds up in Florida, driving force for a Stanley Cup team. One of the elite goal scorers in the NHL now. So, you know, I suppose you go back and look at those two specific cases. Eichel being very unique in that there was a lot of fallout about how best to proceed with a surgery and handle an injury. But, you know, if there's a cautionary tale, if you're Craig Conroy, you don't, at least from our vantage point yet, you don't have a superstar in-house, right? You don't have a Reinhart or an Eichel. And so one of the cautionary tales is, I think, how can you set yourself up to make sure that when you are finally able to get one of those guys, you're ready to surround them properly, but
take
also
of it, yeah.
You take advantage of it.
Yeah. Because there's it is true that if you take a look at the list of recent Stanley Cup winners, by and large, outside of the Vegas Golden Knights, and they traded for theirs, every team has got a top five pick on their roster that was a massive part in, like, name a Stanley Cup winner from the LA Kings in their heyday to the Chicago Blackhawks in theirs recently. Vegas traded for their guy in Eichel, taking advantage of the Sabres and their mishandling. But you take a look at Colorado and just go down the list, even St. Louis and Washington, you know, some of the one-off cup winners that we've seen. Pittsburgh, of course, like, all these teams have Tampa Bay, Florida, like,
right.
I almost forgot who won the Stanley Cup last year.
It took a long while for the sort of fruits of Barkov and to a lesser extent Ekblad to.
But those are top two picks.
Absolutely.
Ekblad's a first and Barkov's a second or a third overall. I think Barkov's a number two selection.
Number two, yeah.
Yeah. So Pietrangelo, it goes on and like we're talking about guys that are high end picks that are Drew Doughty in Los Angeles, Taves and Kane in Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are important pieces on all of these Stanley Cup winners. How do the Flames get theirs? And that's maybe they've gotten very fortunate. It's not even exactly the right word, but maybe they've gotten fortunate and hit the jackpot is a better way of putting it. Maybe they've hit the jackpot on one of their late round picks going back to 2019, and maybe they found one of their young core foundational players going forward in Dustin Wolf.
Seventh round pick, yes.
Mm-hmm. So maybe they've got their guy. I think at this table, you and I believe they do have their guy in Dustin Wolf because we're both very, very bullish on what he is now and where he's going to go. So maybe they found their franchise piece between the pipes.
And yet, Devon Levi is on Buffalo's list of cautionary tales, right?
True.
Too much too soon for a young goalie. Now, I think we're past that point with Dustin Wolf. At least I believe we're close to past that point where it sure seems like those concerns should have evaporated. And yet, that's probably on the list of things that you'd hope to look at and learn from the Buffalo Sabres is they asked too much too soon out of a young goalie. And now look where we are.
They maybe they have their D-man. Like maybe Zane Parekh turns into that guy. Or maybe one of these other young defensemen from Brustevich to Henry Muse. Like maybe they've got their guy on defense. And obviously Parekh would be the guy that you point to first, and you know maybe they've got their guys that you help that you win with as you move forward. Maybe Coronado and Zeri are those guys too. We'll see what Karens turns into, Pelche, so on and so forth. Where do they find their number one center? And that continues to be the biggest pitfall in this whole conversation. So I'm not saying the Flames are doing it right or wrong. I'm not saying the Sabres necessarily did it right or wrong. I am telling you that Buffalo, in their attempt to do what they did, has done it very wrong in terms of execution. But the actual philosophy of the way they did it, I'm not sure if you can say that that's right or wrong, because a lot of teams that have blown it up and have gotten, you know, from Colorado to Edmonton to, like, Florida was quite rough for quite some time. Like, a lot of these teams have turned into Stanley Cup winners. So I'm not suggesting the theory of it is wrong. And then on the other side, everybody points to Dallas as that team that has done it a little bit more on the fly with drafting and developing, and they're knocking on the door to win a Stanley Cup. And so maybe Dallas is a good example of how the other way can go. So it's not so much which way is right and wrong. It's more just hey, you better do whatever you're doing right. And, you know, you can very easily mess either of those philosophies up.
Yeah.
That would be my main message.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good way to put it. And I think it's why all of these – it's why you sort of study these different models and try to figure out what went wrong. And you could say that Dustin Wolf and the current Flames players, like they're challenging Craig Conroy because – the way that they've played, this team's not picking in that stratosphere where the likelihood of getting a superstar increases, right? You talk about all these franchises with top five picks that have lifted Stanley Cups. Now, the flip side is you can also get into that territory and not wind up with a Stanley Cup. There's still plenty of time, but, you know, what have Alex Lafreniere and Kaapo Kakko as 1-2 picks in consecutive years necessarily delivered to the New York Rangers, right? Kakko's now in Seattle. Nothing against Lafreniere, who I think is a solid player, but he's not that first overall superstar, generational, wonderkind, whatever you want to use as your descriptor. And so I like the way you put it, Pat. I think it would be easy, and maybe I'm guilty of this already, of kind of crapping all over the way the Buffalo Sabres have done it. And yet when you're talking about 14 straight years without a playoff spot, when you're talking about having helped to develop, drafted and then helped to develop two legitimate superstar forwards with their names on the Stanley Cup, except they went and did it elsewhere. You know, right now you have two number one picks, two first overall picks on your blue line. And yet you have a team, and yes, I get that those are still young players, especially in Owen Power's case, but you're surrendering almost as many goals as anyone in the league.
Yep.
And so, absolutely, this is, you know, if you're Craig Conroy, who I'm sure all the time feels thankful he didn't get the GM job in Buffalo when he was in the mix for it several years back, you have to look and say what it, it's nothing against who's been the GM currently or before in Buffalo or anywhere else, but you have to look at these other markets and say what can I glean from what they've done well or haven't done well there.
Yeah. Let's hit the text line because I had a feeling it might spur some response, and indeed it has. Mike says, if Jack Eichel was still there, where do you think they'd be? I honestly don't know if they...
it's a good question, isn't it?
I don't know. I honestly don't know because he didn't want to be there anymore. So if he continued to be there not wanting to be there, they probably wouldn't be much better off than they are right now. This says Edmonton has to be the worst example of how to rebuild a team. How many number ones did they have, and how many years did they collect at number one? McDavid's good, but he couldn't do it without Draisaitl. Well, yes and no.
We're not saying Edmonton's done it worse than the team we share a wall with right now.
No. Edmonton got to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final.
As much as we hate
to say it, they finally have figured it out, and they look like a Stanley Cup contender again. Whether or not they win it or not, and that is, you know, kind of the true determination of whether it's fully successful. I mean, McDavid and Draisaitl have taken that team to some pretty, like, to a Western Conference Final, and then to Game 7 of a Stanley Cup Final. Like, it's been a pretty good team here in recent years, and they've seemingly figured it out quite well. So we'll see where it continues to go and if they actually get to the top of the mountain. But
yeah,
when you get that generational player, you usually do figure it out eventually.
Well, and they've played, you know, if we're trying to analyze whether the rebuild has been a success or not, they've played double-digit playoff games in three straight years for sure,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're talking about a team they've made the playoffs every year since 1920, so I think would be five seasons in a row. They've been like we're talking about a team that's put themselves in the mix to win things. And so does that mean your rebuild was automatically a success? Not necessarily, but you know, if you're trying to compare and contrast to the Buffalo Sabres and having not played a playoff game since what, 2011?
2011, yep.
I'm not sure that I'm voting worst rebuild goes to, drumroll please, Edmonton Oilers.
This from Matt in Cochrane. I'd counter argue that both Edmonton and Buffalo struggles begin at the management level during their rebuilds. I would agree with that. I don't really think that's a counter argument. I think it's exactly kind of what we're saying. This is from Bill in Cowtown. Thanks for bringing attention to this. Detroit, Ottawa, and Arizona can all be put on this list as horrible teams for a really long time. No one's saying they're not doing it right or wrong, but they haven't had a lot of wins. This says from Biff, you guys are both are right. Both Buffalo and the Flames are still doing the same thing over and over. Also, both have problems keeping their talent. This from Wedley, drafting is half the equation, development is the other half, but it's not even like guys like Reinhardt and Eichel weren't good players in Buffalo. They just didn't have the same type of team that the teams they ended up getting traded to had.
Yeah.
Eichel was a missing piece, the thing that put Vegas over the top. And Reinhardt could very well have been the exact same thing for the Florida Panthers, him or that guy that used to play here, one of the two.
Yeah, and I wonder about, you know, we never really talk about the sort of development phase that's in the NHL, right? And so, I don't raise this as a way of saying that the Flames are doing everything right, but let's just use an in-house example because we know it best, right? Matt Coronato will tell you and has said over and over again, his development is being aided by playing with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman.
Right.
And, you know, I just wonder when you get to the NHL level, because this Buffalo team is stocked with talented young players, right? Jack Quinn, Zach Benson, Dylan Cousins. You know, you can go on and on. What's happening with the development at the NHL level? That's, I'd love to hear a longtime scout or director of player personnel or player development. I'd love to hear their take on that, because I wonder if that might explain one of the missing pieces in some of these places that become perpetual rebuilds.
This reads, usually the teams that have sustained success, in some cases not playoff success, are the ones that do completely tear it down. I think of Pittsburgh, Chicago, Colorado, Toronto, Edmonton, Washington. These teams were able to consistently make the playoffs, not 1 year in, 1 year out type of thing before they tore it down. This reads from Dan, okay, guys, you sucked me into this convo, but I'm stuck in traffic on Stony Trail, so might as well send a text. Scotty Bowman wrote a book, and it compares all the teams that have won championships and why they were successful. And one of the key things was making sure you get complementary players to your superstars. So when you think of Edmonton, they have Drysdale. When you think of Edmonton, they had Taves and Kane. When you think of Colorado, they have McKinnon and Rantanen and McCarr. So I think that's a key. I don't like comparing the Flames to teams that have no tax or less tax. I don't think it's fair that they have no tax anyway. Long text. You probably won't read it anyway. Well, we did read it. That's from Dan and Cochran. Yes, and that's why
If you're from Cochran, we're reading it.
Usually true.
Yeah.
That's why I say it's got to be more than just one. Like, if Dustin Wolf is great, and if that's a foundational piece, amazing.
Yeah.
But it's got to be more than just that one piece. Ask the Winnipeg Jets.
Well, and to me, buddy, it's one of the things where I struggle to figure out what I'm comparing. I struggle with the comparison of the direction or the path that I think the Flames are on, because I can't off the top of my head think of a ton of teams that sort of had, like, the guys that are here and a lot of the prospects, you're talking about supporting, really nice supporting pieces, right? Connor Zary is going to be a terrific supporting piece for a long time. Matt Coronato is going to be a terrific supporting piece, in my opinion, for a long time. You've got a whole bunch of really interesting lottery tickets on the blue line. I think some of those guys are going to be really good players. Now, do you have your superstar? Maybe it's one of those young defensemen, but right now it would be easier to say, no, you don't have your superstar. You certainly don't have your superstar forward. And so I think you can look at, and I hope this is going to make some sense eventually, I think you can look at a bunch of those teams that bottomed out and ultimately won Stanley Cups. They got a superstar, and then they started trying to collect supporting cast around them. They didn't have a ton of it.
Yep.
In a lot of cases, it's what kept them bad for several years, right? If we're talking about Connor Bedard, for example, winning a Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks in a handful of years, we're going to say when they got Connor Bedard, they didn't have much around him. Spent a long time trying to build the supporting cast. I actually think part of the Flames' method is that the supporting cast can potentially be there when they get the superstar. It's just that the supporting cast ultimately probably doesn't win you the
you
big prize without the superstar.
Yeah.
And that's why, again, I hope that made some sense. That's why I struggle to find the right comparables sometimes to the direction the Flames are going, because the more obvious examples did it the other way.
Rapid fire on a few more texts. This reads, execution is key, Pat. You're absolutely correct. This says, a lot of people mad that we would suggest the Oilers have figured it out. Look, they got McDavid. Whether that means figuring it out or not, they did get their foundational player.
Dirty player, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, he's a victim.
No, I'm not on that.
Connor McDavid is a victim.
You might need to.
I need to
shut down the text line.
I can't believe this smear campaign the NHL has put out to suspend this perfect specimen of a human being.
No offense to the Flames and Buffalo Sabres, but I kind of wish I was watching the rematch tonight.
I hope Connor Garland's got it. You hold a player, you got to answer for that.
Oh, yeah.
If you get cross-checked in the face, square to the teeth, you better fight the next game.
You don't get cross-checked in the teeth on our watch.
Since when are Flames fans, like, completely on the side of one of Vancouver's greasier players? Like, what are we talking about?
We should really have Rasmus Anderson on to pick a side on this one. We know he hates both of them.
That's a good point. What else we got here at 960-960? This says Bedard and the Hawks are very similar to Edmonton when they first acquired McDavid. Kevin in North Haven says Flames need to focus on drafting high-end centers above all else until they get one, including over Wolf, creating an improbable playoff run. They'll have a superstar goalie and center and possibly one or two superstar D then. Wingers will then fall into place. That's just a little bit on the text line at 960-960. It's a Steinberg and Wes along with you. Fun conversation to kick off the hour here on Flames Talk. As we always tell you, Wes, Flames Talk available wherever you get your podcasts. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker. You can get it around Calgary, around Alberta, around Western Canada. Yeah. And as we keep on finding out, you can get Flames Talk anywhere in the world. So a healthy shout out to all of our worldwide listeners as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you and I were talking about this. I want to give a very quick shout out. We have a very loyal listener. His name's AJ Easton. I've become
last
a friend of
name
mine.
Treatment. I like it.
In Thailand. I'm amazed. The texts I get from him just on the beach, just on the golf course, listening to you and Pat talk about the Flames. Happy 40th for starters, AJ, but kind of a cool opportunity, I think, for us to just say thank you to those of you who are a long, long ways from Calgary and are listening to Flames Talk. We talked about this off air. It's really cool, isn't it? Like, it's really neat to hear about people tuning in, downloading the podcast, staying in touch with their favorite team via us. And so if you fit that description, near or far, thank you very much.
Yeah, I can think of my buddy Gavin in Berlin. There's James in Hong Kong, all over the United States. We've got a number, Brisbane, Australia, Melbourne, Australia. I think Western Australia, there's a couple. It's pretty neat. You know, my buddy Raghav is always traveling. Like, he'd be in India, he'd be in London, and he's always listening. It's pretty neat to see the every once in a while I can go look on our podcast program to see where all the dots are that people listen to a certain episode. It's pretty neat to see. You're like, oh, there we go. That's one. I bet I know who's listening in Germany. And so that's now I bet I know who will be listening in Thailand.
There you go.
Steinberg, Wes, we're here at the Hot Stove Lounge here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome on this Thursday edition. But, of course, everything getting produced back at our Groundworks downtown studio. Your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
All right, time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Thursday, brought to you as always by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson, and now Derek Wills joins us around the table as well to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Thursday. And, gents, one thing we have not touched on so far in this hour is the news of the day on this Thursday for the Flames. Clark Bishop recalled by Calgary. And not only is he getting recalled, he's also going to make his Calgary Flames debut Thursday night against Buffalo. He's not his NHL debut. He's played NHL games before, but has never played with the Flames. And he's going to come right into the lineup and bump Kevin Rooney to healthy scratch territory on this Thursday evening. Just a reaction to Bishop being the guy recalled, and not just being recalled, but moving right in to fourth line center duty on this Thursday night.
So does that mean fewer interactions for us when we tweet the lines and pairings tonight?
I leave that to you guys.
I already have. I tweeted them out, and there were lots of people who seemed to be happy with the decision.
Okay. Well, congratulations to Clark Bishop, who tonight will play in his first NHL game since February 15th of 2022, 1,072 days ago. So It's been a while for him, but he's having a fantastic season.
Is there a point that the solo lap resets? Like, it wouldn't be 3 years, but how long would you have?
1,075 days is where it resets.
I knew you'd be on top of that.
Yeah, no solo lap for Clark Bishop tonight, but it's going to be an exciting night for him. He's having a career year. You know, he's never really been a goal scorer or point producer, but he has been for the Calgary Wranglers this season. Already has a career-high 16 goals and 33 points in 39 games. Has never been a big point producer in the NHL either. 1 goal and 8 points in 47 games with the Hurricanes and the Senators. But what this recall tells me is that the Flames, they know they need another centerman. They know they need another option to play center on the fourth line. And they're trying to see if they have an internal fix for that, I'm using air quotes, problem. And if not, then maybe Craig Conroy looks for an external one. And I'm not saying he's going to trade a bunch of picks and prospects for a veteran fourth-line centerman. I don't see that happening, certainly not now, although Elliot Friedman, when he was on Sportsnet 590 this morning, did suggest that if the right rental for the right price was available between now and the deadline, assuming the Flames are still in the push for a playoff spot or in one, that he thinks Craig Conroy might make that move because he thinks his team's earned it. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But I think best case scenario is you find someone internally who can give you some minutes up the middle and maybe even at some point in time take on some penalty kill time. So we'll see what we get from Clark Bishop tonight. 28 years old and in his ninth pro season. So I'm sure he's excited to make his Flames debut here at Scotiabank Saddledome. And what's a big game against the Sabres tonight?
Clark Bishop had one of the more impressive streaks I remember hearing about or writing about earlier this year. Four consecutive games in a seven-night span. He scored the game-winning goal.
Wow.
Yeah, four straight game winners for the Calgary Wranglers back in October. But you mentioned the penalty kill. You mentioned the ability as a fourth-line center, the ability to potentially win some face-offs for this team. Like, I think Pat and I spent a lot of time talking about potential recalls and would it be Dryden Hunt or would it be William Stromgren? And the fact that it's 28-year-old Clark Bishop, captain of the Calgary Wranglers, what that tells me is that they had just a very, very obvious opportunity in mind, a very obvious spot, that being Kevin Rooney's. And it also tells me that they're willing to consider a permanent, I guess, switch in that role. Like, you wouldn't be auditioning him, I don't think, in Kevin Rooney's role just to give Kevin Rooney one night off. I'm not saying that it's not possible Kevin Rooney's back in the lineup next game and stays in for the rest of the year. It's absolutely possible. But I do think there's a real opportunity here for Clark Bishop to say, I can do that job better. I think the Flames are open to that. And you mentioned the potential of getting a rental kind of as a reward to your team for being in the wild card race. You know, something we talk about all the time in trade talks is leverage, right? And if it looks like you have a guy who can do the job, you have a little bit of leverage in those trade negotiations too.
Well, and the other thing is that, you know, they Ryan Huska even said a couple of days ago, we talked about it on Tuesday's roundtable, you know, maybe giving Rory Karens a look down the middle, and instead of upsetting your top nine apple cart where Karens has 4 points in four games, and being like, well, okay, we definitely need to do something for our fourth line, and it has not been rolling very well, and already Walker Dewar has been claimed on waivers by San Jose. Do we really want to then mess with chemistry even more by, you know, putting Karens into a spot down the middle on the fourth line, and instead we've got this ready-made option? Like, we want to make a change, and here's a guy that can step in and do the job, or at the very least profiles the same way as Rooney does. Why not give it a try? I think that's another really good reason to make this call. And so you put him in. We're expecting him to play between Lomberg and Pelche on the fourth line in this game on Thursday night. And I just I like it. And the fourth line has not been anywhere near as effective as it had been. Like, there was a stretch there, you know, through October and November where things were going really well for the Flames and they were building the cushion that they're still enjoying now, where on a lot of nights their fourth line with Kirkland being a big part of it, like that line
line was a big reason why they won some games, and it gave them a lot of depth advantages. Well, through the month of December into January, that has not been the same case, and there have been far too many nights where the fourth line has been an absolute black hole out there, and they had relied on that line. Mick talks about it a lot, about taking a lot of D-zone faceoffs, and they kind of have had to ease back on that because they've been taking a lot of D-zone faceoffs and then getting their brains beat in. And so you've kind of turned it's kind of turned into the fourth line over the last number of weeks has turned into a big-time liability. So you had to do something with it. And instead of messing up a line that's working with Sharon Govich and Karens, yeah, bring up a guy like Bishop who can play down the middle. And if he projects the way that it looks like he does or has throughout his career, I think can be a fine fourth-line center in the NHL if it goes in the right direction.
Let me ask you guys a question. So when the fourth line, and there's been some different iterations of it this season, but you know, had Ryan Lomberg in the left for almost every game, and you know, we've seen Justin Kirkland and Kevin Rooney and Walker Dewar, and boy, we've had some other guys playing on the right side of that fourth line this season. How would you describe the identity of that line when they played to it and played well?
Fast and physical.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably fair. And
like an energy line.
Yeah, kind of.
Fair?
Yeah. And
not a line that you just like throw out there to kill time. Like you could expect it to go out there. And when they were playing well, especially when Kirkland was centering it, you could expect them to go in there and kind of win the battle against the other team's fourth line.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Adam Klapka there too.
Sure.
My point is I would describe the fourth line when it's right as an energy line. Probably not going to score a lot of goals and produce a lot of points, but you know, a line that's tough to play against, that can hem you in on the forecheck, that bangs and crashes, and kind of sets the table for the next line mm-hmm. that comes on the ice. Does Rory Karens fit that bill?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, not really.
Right, so when I saw him centering the fourth line, I'm like, based on the identity of the fourth line to this point in the season,
yeah,
I don't think he's a fit there. He described himself, when I asked him to, as vanilla. And I've heard the coaches call him cerebral. That's not an energy player. That's a guy who you want yeah. in a scoring role in
vanilla,
your top nine.
Hey? Is that what he said?
That's what
vanilla?
He said, vanilla.
That's
and,
what.
And that was the night after he, or two nights after he scored
yeah.
or picked up 2 points in his NHL debut.
That's so, what Pat said on my last performance review.
I love vanilla, so I don't even take that as an insult. But so my thinking was, okay, if they're going to put Rory Karens at center on the fourth line, maybe they're going to ask that line to play to a different identity. Maybe mm-hmm. they're going to try to put a line together that can chip in offensively because the Flames need goals and points from anywhere they can get them, from their forwards, from yep. their defensemen. And, hey, if you can get some more from your fourth line, takes the pressure off the other three lines and your three defense pairings. So I thought, okay, maybe you put a line together where you've got Lomberg on the left, Karens up the middle, and Peltier. So you've got that Karens-Peltier connection still, which worked in the AHL and in a small sample size has worked in the NHL together, a little different-looking fourth line.
Sure.
But if you still want a fourth line that is an energy line, I just don't think that Rory Karens,
yeah,
with all due respect, is a fit in that spot. Is Clark Bishop? I guess we'll start to see tonight. And I also wonder if they're trying to light a fire under Kevin Rooney here and maybe create another internal competition, which we talked about yesterday.
Absolutely to that part. There's no question they're trying to light a fire under him or at least show him that when you don't play the way we need you to, and when you're not having the impact on the penalty kill that was keeping you in the lineup, we have options.
Yeah.
Because right now, Kevin Rooney for a long time looked over his shoulder and saw Andre Kuzmenko as the healthy
yeah.
scratch. Well, that guy's not going in as your fourth line center. And so, but I do think, Willsy, back to your point, giving Clark Bishop the first shot there tells me that Ryan Huska covets the identity of his fourth line being about energy more than anything else. Because we wondered if with Walker Dewar on waivers and what would happen next, we wondered if that was a chance to maybe reimagine the number one goal of your fourth line. Are you trying to have a less, quote-unquote, prototypical fourth line that's not all about bang and crash? I think the answer we got this morning is yep. that, no, Ryan Huska wants a more typical fourth yep. line.
Yeah. when you brought up when we were talking about Hunt on Tuesday,
right,
like putting that line together from the American League and how productive they were, that would have gone in the other direction. But, yeah, this having Bishop move in there and play in this game is a really good indication as to what they want to continue having that fourth line's identity, even having Pelche there. And I know that is something that has not had a lot of people all that happy that Pelche is slotted in as the fourth line right wing. But I think that's even something that speaks to the same thing in talking about that energy. Daily Flames Roundtable with Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg on this Thursday. Now, I will preface this that on Sportsnet today, with Logan earlier on this Thursday, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, who's as tapped into the Sabres as anybody, was very adamant when he said that this player is not on the block. But there's a lot of people on the outside talking about the potential of Buffalo moving on from former 7th overall selection Dylan Cousins, former Lethbridge Hurricane, UConn product, so on and so forth. Of all the potential trade targets that we've talked about, of all the potential really good fits the Flames might be able to slot into their lineup and fill their biggest role or their biggest need right now, which is a right shot center, is there anybody higher on that list realistically than Cousins?
Not that I can think of. I do wonder if they would move him for the right price. And the reason I ask is clearly what they're doing in Buffalo is not working. And it's tough to trade 23-year-old former 7th overall picks because chances are they're going to improve as a player. But here's the thing with Dylan Cousins. So he records a career-high 31 goals and 68 points in 81 games back in 2022-2023, and then signs a 7-year, $49.7 million contract that carries a $7.1 million AAV. Since then, 18 goals and 47 points in 79 games last season, 10 goals and 23 points in 47 games this season. Listen, he's a good young player. He's not a $7.1 million player the last couple of years. So maybe the Sabres would consider moving on, not so much from the player, but from the contract if they could get the right return. And it's right in the right age range for the Flames, early to mid-20s. He's got some pedigree, and he's proven that he can put the puck in the net in this league. And we know they're looking for a right-handed centerman. So he does fit the bill for the Flames. I guess the question is, would the Sabres move him? And if so, what would it cost to get him?
Yeah, of the guys who were reportedly available or the names that have been on the rumor mill the most, or in the rumor mill, I'm sorry, the most, is probably the most appealing target, you know. But you raise a good point about the fall off in stats. You know, to this, the first time I heard this phrase was from Ray Ferraro, so I'm going to credit him. He always said something along the lines of, are you a 30-goal scorer, or did you score 30 goals one season? Right? There's a difference.
Yeah. Right.
Are you a 20-goal scorer, or did you get 20 once?
Are you talking to Joe Colburn?
What's that?
Joe Colburn.
Am I talking about him?
Yeah.
Well, you
remember he scored the hat trick in the season finale to get to 20? That didn't make him a 20-goal scorer.
The first time I actually heard the saying was in regards to Blake Como. Are you a 20 yeah. goal scorer, or did you
I heard
get
it
20?
I heard it. Boomer used that when talking about David Moss.
Right, and so my question is, you know, is Dylan Cousins
what a guy, by the way,
30
Moss.
Goal scorer, or did he score 30? And then my next question is, you know, Pat and I were talking in the last segment about, well, how do you get your superstar center? How do you get your first line center? Are the Sabres asking? If they decide to move this guy, are they asking for the type of return you'd be asking for a first-line center? Because I'm not sure Dylan Cousins is that. I think he can be a really good supporting piece. You talk about the price tag cap-wise, which is certainly another major consideration. I wonder about the price point the other way. Is the reason Mike Harrington says Dylan Cousins isn't on the block now, it is the reason for that that they listened to the offers and thought, No, we think he's worth a lot more than that, so we're keeping him. I don't know. I just, yeah, is he appealing? Sure. Am I, you know, paying a long list of assets to get him out of Buffalo? I'd be a little bit hesitant.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't. The assets, yes. The contract doesn't scare me just because I'm like, yeah, they've got plenty of cap room with a rising cap going forward.
It always helps when it's not your money, too.
It does, but And it's definitely not.
But you've also worked really hard to accumulate that cap space. You don't want to just throw it away.
But, you know, if I have to take that risk for a guy that could solve one of my biggest organizational needs for two decades and the biggest need on the team right now and going forward, I'd be willing to take that risk with the cost certainty that's there. Do I think that he's going to be a superstar center? No, probably not. But if he could be a number two center in this league as a right shot, like, I don't think it solves the thing that the Flames absolutely need to find to be a cup contender, and that's a true number one center. I don't think it solves that, but I do think it fills a role for them going forward. I do think it's a guy that they can grow with and move forward with. So it also helps them now. There's no doubt about that it also would give them a big upgrade for the rest of this season, which in my opinion would kind of be the side benefit to going out and getting him. But it you keep on hearing that the Sabres, if they're going to move him, they want to avoid making the same mistakes that Wes and I talked about in the first hour. Like, you don't want, like, Sam Reinhardt. You say, okay, what is Reinhardt in Buffalo? Well, you know what Reinhardt in Florida is? A soon-to-be two-time 50-goal scorer. What is Jack? Is Jack Eichel ever going to be a super? You know what? Jack Eichel's getting Hart Trophy consideration and was a driving force in winning a Stanley Cup a couple years ago. So they're trying to not have that happen again. So do I really see it happening? Not so much. But I do think from a fit standpoint, it's about as good as you're going to get in terms of somebody that you could actually realistically see end up moving.
Yeah, and maybe he does turn into a number one centerman. He's not that right now, but that's okay if he doesn't become that guy. Can he, at some point in time, replace one of Nazem Kadri or Michael Backlund? Two guys who are well into their 30s. Mm-hmm. They're still really good players, but at some point in time, you're going to have to replace one of those guys. And I'm not sure if it's going to be Backlund or Kadri first. So if Dylan Cousins can grow into a good number two center in this league, I think that helps you solve a problem. Now you increase your depth down the middle. You had that right shot. But I think to Pat's point, it also helps you down the road because you do have to plan ahead. So we'll have to wait and see where it goes. But he'd certainly be, if the Sabres were open to listening, a guy who I want to talk to them about.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as you're not paying a first line price tag.
Yeah. That will wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. And the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.